This WBEZ podcast is supported by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Connection is the greatest strength in the fight against suicide. Together, we can encourage those who are struggling to seek help and to know they're not alone. For free resources or to learn how you can get involved in their mission, visit afsp.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
I'm Lisa Labas in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around for a breakdown of today's top stories later in the episode. But first, Illinois needs more housing. The Illinois Economic Policy Institute and the Project for Middle Class Renewal at the University of Illinois report the state needs to build over 200,000 units over 5 years to keep pace with housing demand. Governor J.B. Pritzker has a plan to address this housing shortage. It's called the BUILD Plan, Building Up Illinois Developments. By easing zoning restrictions, the idea is to make building multi-unit developments easier. Now, housing advocates are excited by the proposal, but some Illinois municipalities have concerns. And today you'll hear both perspectives. You'll hear from Illinois Realtors CEO Jeff Baker and Riverside Village President Doug Pollack. Before that, let's get to the basics from WBEZ Statehouse reporter Mawa Iqbal. Here she is.
It's a sweeping package, and it's in fact one of the main priorities that Governor Pritzker had laid out in his budget proposal back in February. And so essentially what it does, the big broad strokes, is that local zoning boards would no longer be allowed to prohibit property owners from building, like you said earlier, multi-unit housing on residential lots. The idea is to basically make it like a more standardized statewide system for building multi-unit housing, right? So it also applies to more accessory dwelling units, attached or detached secondary residence, like granny flats, backyard cottages. So those would also be legalized on all properties zoned for residential use. And this is especially notable for people in Chicago because the city moved last year to relax its 60-year ban on granny flats.
Gotcha.
There's also a lot of provisions pertaining to the actual permitting process for building. So if local governments don't complete an inspection or review within a certain number of days, the applicant would actually be able to use a qualified third-party firm to do it, instead of having to go with the local municipality or township or whatever the case may be. It would also prohibit minimum parking requirements on middle housing, and then exempt affordable developments from municipal parking requirements. And the idea, right, is basically that, you know, Governor Pritzker was saying that he wants to make, you know, a sort of a standardized system, right?
So
this patchwork of local barriers and local, you know, red tape has, what he says, impeded on the development of housing and ultimately driven up costs for people statewide.
Right. Yeah, let's talk about that. How bad is Illinois' housing supply right now?
Yeah, so Illinois currently faces a shortage of about 142,000 housing units. And according to the governor's office, the state would need to build 227,000 units over the next 5 years to keep up with the pace of demand.
Right.
The supply crisis has cost Illinois approximately $2 billion in brokerage activity and about $9.7 billion in gross economic impact in the last 5 years alone.
Okay. And I think a big part of the problem is affordability. There are available housing units, but they're just too expensive for a lot of people.
Right. And this is an interesting part of the debate, too. A lot of the opponents of this bill say that, you know, that this package may increase and spur the development of more housing. But is it really affordable housing? And, you know, the affordability landscape in Illinois currently, so I was looking up data, and it looks like in March 2026, home prices in Illinois were up almost 5% compared to last year. And the median price, of course, this varies based on where in the state you're living, but the median price for a home was $314,000. that there's also data that suggests that home prices have been jumping since February 2019 by nearly 50%. So even though costs are about 20% lower than the national average in Illinois, rapid prices increases and limited supply have all like contributed to this strained affordability issue for families.
All right, gotcha. All right. So the spring legislative session ends at the end of the month in, you know, what, 15, 16 days. What is the status of this bill?
So it hasn't actually been assigned to any committees yet, which that would usually be the first step in a bill or that a bill must take in order to eventually get in front of the whole chamber to be voted and read three times before it passes on to the second chamber. But, you know, anything can happen in Springfield, as they say, even though we do have only 2.5 weeks left in session. It's very possible that this bill language could essentially be copy pasted as an amendment to another bill that's already done much of that process so that it could, you know, speed through the chamber. So we shall see what ends up happening.
We shall see. All right. Thanks for the update. That's WBEZ State House reporter Mawa Iqbal. Thank you for taking the time, Mawa.
Thank you.
And now I want to turn to our other guests in the studio with me. I've got Riverside Village President Doug Pollack. And on the phone, we've got Jeff Baker, who is CEO of Illinois Realtors. So let's be clear. We all agree there is a need for more housing, and we would like to see more development in communities all over the state. Correct, Mr. Baker, do you want to start?
Yeah, I think Mawa's kind of summary of it some of the stats that she gave, I think we're right on, and we're actually some of the stats that we've been distributing both with the governor's office and with other stakeholders. And I think it's important, perhaps if I was to add anything to that explanation up front, is just to understand kind of the scope and scale of the issue. You know, we talked about 150,000 home shortage right now, over 200,000 in the next 5 years. What that translates to, though, is that Illinois would need to triple its new home construction every single year for the next 5 years just to meet the current demand. And that obviously just should immediately show you how difficult it's going to be for Illinois to start to catch up on providing the number of homes that we really need across the state.
Sure.
So to say that it is, you know, an economic problem, you know, we mentioned at the outset what it's cost the state already, which is almost $1 trillion in 5 years. You know, that those are staggering numbers, but also it just helps to understand, wow, we have to really get moving very quickly if we're going to really start to put a dent in this problem and address affordability for everyone here.
Okay. Doug Pollack, you're in Riverside. Do you agree that there's a need for more housing?
Certainly, we agree that there's a statewide, there's a need for more housing.
Yeah. Right. What is the affordable housing situation look like in Riverside in the western suburbs?
Well, Riverside has a decent supply of affordable housing. In fact, we were exempt from the 2003 Affordable Housing Act because we had met the minimum criteria, minimum threshold for affordable housing. We agree. I think most municipalities agree that an ample supply of housing and affordable housing should be a policy of state and local governments. Mm-hmm. But that should not be the only goal of a housing policy.
Sure, sure. We'll get to your concerns in just a minute. Sure. Jeff, where you're living, what does affordable housing look like? Is there enough?
Well, I think what's really important just at the outset is to create a distinction between affordable and attainable. The state already has multiple programs and hundreds of millions of dollars devoted to affordable housing programs. And for example, the statewide Affordable Housing Act that the village president just mentioned is something that pertains to subsidized low-income housing. And what the build plan really addresses is attainable housing, missing middle housing that is not low-income subsidized housing. So I think that that's a really important distinction to make. And what we see, more specifically to your question, though, is that in almost every single community across the state, there is a lack of that attainable housing. There is almost no missing middle housing.
Right. So yeah. are you talking about like starter homes, like which there are very, very few of, as the stories that I'm reading, there are very few like starter homes, a small kind of affordable-ish home that somebody that would be their first home.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you kind of got to it at the very opening of the segment where you talked about, you know, what housing supply is available, but then what the current prices of those homes are. So the homes that are available aren't starter homes or even, you know, second homes for growing families, for example.
Right.
These are families and individuals who are making good money, who are making, you know, 100% or 120% of AMI for the area of the state that they live in, and they still can't afford the homes because what is available is so far out of their price range, which gets to, and you know, we're happy to talk about, you know, why is it that we can only build right now at that high end? But if that's all that's available, you're not going to have workforce housing. You're not going to have housing that's affordable for folks who don't need government subsidies. Okay. In order to get into their first home.
All right. Doug Pollack, I want to know, what are you hearing from Riverside community members about this attainable housing that Jeff Baker is bringing up? What are you hearing?
Well, we're hearing a lot of concerns about how it impacts the quality of neighborhoods.
Okay.
As I said, affordable housing, ample supply of housing, attainable housing, those are all legitimate policy goals for the state and for local government. But I think residents of Illinois deserve more than that. They deserve an ample supply of housing. They deserve to have housing they can attain and afford. But they also deserve quality communities.
Sure.
And
good schools.
Good
and
schools.
Nice streets.
Good neighborhoods.
Yeah, parks.
A mix of housing in a neighborhood. And I think the Build Illinois plan falls short of that.
Tell me more about your concerns.
Sure. Build Illinois does not take into consideration, in my opinion, the unique character of each neighborhood and community.
Mm-hmm.
Local zoning and local land use policy allows municipalities to target locations for middle housing, where such as duplexes and townhomes, that fit into a community, that fit into a neighborhood and complement the neighborhood. It also allows local land use policy allows municipalities to create standards for middle housing that fit the neighborhood and make for a better community, better living situation for those residents. Encouragement and incentives from the state are appropriate. And I think they're needed.
Mm-hmm.
The details, however, are best left at the local level.
Right. You don't want a state mandate. You would like to say, oh, here's this framework. Let's figure out how Riverside can do it.
Correct. And for example, if the state were to say, local government, you need to amend your zoning to increase the amount of middle housing by X percent. Then leave it up to us to figure out where that goes, how that goes, what those standards are, and we could make that will actually enhance the quality of neighborhoods. Whereas just a mandate that just says everywhere you can do middle housing, there's a lot of potential for unintended consequences from legislation like that.
Sure. So you think it's not well thought out on your on your level?
I think it needs more work.
Okay.
I think it needs to be developed so that there's more local control over the quality of that housing and where it's located and making sure that it complements neighborhoods and doesn't just become a haphazard infusion of development.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, so Governor Pritzker joined AmeriCorp broker Matt Laracy on a podcast called Re-Up. Here's what the governor had to say in a preview of the episode on social media.
What we're trying to do is just add a few homes all across the state of Illinois. Mm-hmm. Again, it's not designed so that you're going to see all these massive buildings going up in places
sure.
where they don't belong. But again, why are we restricting people from taking an apartment that's above a garage and not make it into a small home for somebody? It could be a home for a single person, right? And why are we not allowing that in all across the state of Illinois?
All right, Jeff Baker, the governor says this isn't about building massive developments in places they don't belong. Tell us, what do you make of that concern? Is there some validity there?
No, I think that some of the arguments that have been made to kind of generate opposition to the build plan have tried to focus on this, words like character and words like local control. And I think when you get down to the actual facts of what the bill says, and then also look at other examples of where this has already been done, because quite frankly, Illinois is a little bit behind the ball on this. There's roughly about a dozen other states that have implemented some form of what we're talking about in the build plan. And so when you look at what the build plan actually says regarding local control, first off, is that it preserves the ability for municipalities to make local decisions about, for example, their comprehensive plan and their city layouts, lot size, designations. So all of that is preserved in the build plan.
What about the build plan works for you? What are you excited about?
Well, I think that it's exactly what the governor was just alluding to there on that podcast, which is where you see this has already been done. You see gentle or moderate increases in density in communities all over the state where this has already been done. You don't see widespread conversions. You don't see widespread development of sky rises or massive, apartment complexes. What you see is more gentle additions to density in neighborhoods. You see one or two ADUs added here or there. You see a few more duplexes. You see a few more townhomes. Mm-hmm. And it is that gentle increase in supply, which number one, moderates home price appreciation in the community. And number two, adds an element of supply that is already more moderately priced. So I think that once you start to see the evidence that's happened in other communities or other states where this has already been done, you start to see the positives for what can happen in this state. Real quickly, I would also say the possibilities of cutting back on permit or cutting down the time for permit review poses a lot of positive potential for cities that are actually open-minded about new housing supply. Permit delays, city approvals, regulatory red tape slows down new housing supply greatly across the state and adds thousands of dollars to the cost of new homes. Impact fee reform is going to be incredibly beneficial across the state and to the communities that require or that rely upon impact fees in their municipal budgets. So I think that there's the positives are incredible for the state. And like I said, the stats just show that we're beyond the time for getting started on this. So it needs to happen sooner rather than later.
Okay. Doug, you told one of our producers that you were at a lunch with mayors throughout West Cook County, and you all talked about this build plan. Take us to lunch with you. What did you learn from your peers? What are they saying?
The concern is the impact on the quality of neighborhoods and the lack of guardrails on this legislation. Everything that Mr. Baker said, I tend to agree with. Mm-hmm. A moderate change to neighborhoods is doable, is sustainable for communities. But as I read this legislation, there's no guardrails to ensure that. Whereas most of the impact may be moderate, there's still the potential for significant impact on specific neighborhoods.
Sure.
And I think local municipal leaders just would like to see more guardrails, more ability to influence where and how this mental housing is built.
Okay, fair enough. Maybe you and Jeff should have lunch together and hammer out these concerns. All right, I want to thank you both for your time. You've been hearing from the Riverside Village President, Doug Pollack, and also Jeff Baker, who is CEO of Illinois Realtors. State lawmakers have until the end of this month to finalize their budget and maybe pass any key bills, including potentially this build plan. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking the time. We'll be right back. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration blends classroom learning with extensive field education, guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Inspire change. Shape the future. This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
Time to cover the biggest news happening in Chicago and beyond. And with me to break it down, I've got Chicago Sun-Times investigative reporter Bob Hergeth, also WBEZ audio and digital editor Miriam Kramer, and WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane. Remember when the Democratic National Convention was the talk of the town a couple years ago? Well, if Governor Pritzker and Mayor Johnson get their way, we'll host it again in 2028, maybe even 2032 as well. Here's Claire.
Pritzker is part of a larger group of local elected officials. They want to bring the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, back to Chicago in 2028. I think it's just because people like the rumor of Beyonce maybe being here, and so they like the attention that brings. But over the last couple of days, some of these leaders have been doing some serious legwork trying to woo the DNC to make this happen, giving them some Chicago specials, an architectural boat tour. They went on a little ride. Sure. A walkthrough of the United Center, which was where the DNC was held the last time it was here, and a pretty hot ticket. A reception was held at the yet-to-be-opened Obama Presidential Center.
That is a hot ticket.
So they got to do the tour and experience all of the magic
of the
that we can only imagine it lies inside that. But Pritzker is just saying that he's pretty adamant about this wanting to be back, and that Chicago has hosted the DNC twice in a row, three times in the city's history. So it's not, you know, out of the ordinary.
Sure, sure. And here's what the governor had to say at this press conference while he was on the 94th floor of the former Hancock Building. Local officials were showing off the city. They had a great day to do it, too, in hopes of landing the DNC.
To turn this country around and win the White House, we need to reintroduce American families to a Democratic Party that is ready to stand up and fight for them. Hosting the 2028 DNC in Chicago sends a clear message that as a party, we are ready to do just that.
All right. So that's the argument from the governor. Bob and Miriam, do you have any thoughts about this? Does Chicago need the DNC back here?
I will just say I wasn't here for the DNC 2 years ago.
Sure.
So having one here, like as a news person, could be kind of fun for me to be on the ground for it.
Could
but I'm
be
curious
a little
what
fun.
Bob thinks. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, just the backdrop to this, of course, is that Governor Pritzker may be running for president, too. So he's been obviously and been expanding his name recognition and sort of presence on the national stage through different appearances and, you know, anti-Trump things. So that's interesting. I was here long ago, giving my age away, back in the 90s when Chicago hosted it, when Daley was mayor.
I remember that.
You know, so it's Chicago's, I mean, great spot, obviously. But I guess we'll see.
Well, we rebuilt the whole Damon Green Line stop to accommodate, you know, all the people attending the DNC. So
they
we've got some infrastructure to support this, at least.
Right. Yeah. So and maybe it's a pep rally just for the governor to showcase Pritzker.
He's willing to throw some of his own money into this as well. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how much and if that is even part of what his presidential budget is.
Right, right, right. So the governor was in Chicago, but the mayor was down in Springfield trying to keep the Bears in Chicago. But now the mayor he's jetting off. Where is he going, Claire?
He's jetting off to the Vatican. He is
hanging
going to Rome to meet Pope Leo XIV later this month.
Okay,
it's going to be his first official meeting, Mayor Johnson, with our Dalton-born pontiff. He's saying he wants to talk to the Pope
and thank him for standing up for the most vulnerable. You know, Mayor Johnson, kind of an advocate of that. The official meeting is scheduled for May 28th. What I thought was interesting is Mayor Johnson says he's going to bring the Pope a Cubs hat as a gift.
Wow, which this seems like a bit of a I don't know.
We'll see if that turns out to be true. Given we know that the Pope is
a Sox fan. Also, those White Sox are kind of red hot at the moment, and the Cubs are in the. They're not doing.
Right.
They might be high on the. They might be leading and on top of the league almost, but they've lost their last four now.
It just goes to show you that the Crosstown Classic is now crossing oceans.
It sure is. It sure is. Bob Hergeth, speaking
different
of
kind of cross.
Yeah, exactly.
I see what you did there.
Yep.
All right. Speaking of politicians, Bob Hergeth, you've got a story in today's Sun Times about the fact that not all local officials are keeping their distance from former Chicago alderperson Ed Burke. So remind us about this story. Where is Burke right now?
Burke is out of prison. Mm-hmm. He was 50 plus years in city council, arguably one of the most powerful political figures in Chicago and Illinois for decades. And he was convicted on corruption charges a couple of years ago and went to prison, albeit briefly. Some believe way too briefly. And he's been out. And his campaign funds, plural, are flush with cash still, over $10 million. And they've been somewhat dormant in terms of raising money and spending money since his troubles began, or at least since his troubles really ramped up with his trial, except he was paying legal fees with them, apparently, for his defense. But somewhat recently, over the past few months, it's kind of come to light that he's been donating, not heavily, but to a couple of different political figures, and I took notice, so did a story.
Yeah, so what did you find out about who is taking contributions tied to Burke?
Alderman Ray Lopez, who's the 15th Ward Alderman and a local Democratic committeeman, took two different donations, totaling 10 grand over the past few months. Lopez is one of the kind of ardent allies and friends and defenders of Burke. I mean, not defending his criminality, but up until almost the bitter end of Burke's tenure, Lopez stood behind him and also actually proposed, as our brilliant friend Spielman reported back at the time, Lopez proposed an Ed Burke Day in Chicago, even though the guy was, very obviously under criminal investigation for, all kinds of misdeeds and subsequently convicted. So Lopez has been a fan and a friend of Burke, and so he was the main recipient of the money recently.
Okay, we kind of appreciated the headline on this one. Convicted former Alderman Edward Burke's campaign money isn't radioactive to everyone.
Yeah, well, there's nothing illegal about taking money from a guy who still has an active campaign fund, but what does it tell voters that, Burke's a felon, and and how did he get all that money? The optics of it aren't great, but, not judging, just, pointing out the facts and Lopez did respond and said, hey, look, I believe in second chances and blah, 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 blah. So, and then the other guy that took the money was a campaign fund for Niles's mayor, George Albigianis, who's a restaurateur, just was elected to a second term as Niles mayor. And he said he goes way back with Burke, and he came out of Pat O'Connor's 40th Ward organization back in the day. The family used to own Palace Grill on the west side. Knows a lot of people, been a long time involved with politics, and considers Burke a political mentor. And he said Burke and his wife found out he had a fundraiser and cut him a check, and that's that.
That's that. All right. Miriam, we do like to focus on local news here on In the Loop, but let's indulge us just a little bit. There is something happening about 4.4 billion light years away that you want to talk about.
Yeah, so not exactly local, but interesting nonetheless. So scientists have found this pair of huge black holes, the largest, most massive ever discovered. They're about 60 billion times the mass of the sun when you combine them together. And they actually found this because in 2018, they thought that there was just some dust covering this distant galaxy, But in reality, what they found now is that it was actually these two black holes that have basically just created a void in space.
Oh, good Lord. And this doesn't scare me at all. So they're gonna collide and suck everything up around them?
They will collide. We are safe. But the thing that I think is—
Are you sure?
Yes. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
All right.
But I think the thing that's sort of the most amazing thing about this to me is that, like, when they do combine, when they do crash into each other, they will ripple the fabric of space and time. And that will potentially, you know, go through Earth. And that happens all the time. We don't feel it. We don't know. But it stretches.
It's never been this massive, Miriam.
We don't know unless Matthew McConaughey appears out of the black hole.
That's true.
All right. Okay. What's so exciting about this potentially scary thing for me? For you, what is so exciting?
One thing that I think is really cool is that, I mean, you know, this is going to happen probably millions of years from now. So we're not going to be around for it necessarily.
Good.
But if there are people on Earth, we do have tools right now that can actually detect gravitational waves. So it can detect these ripples in the in the fabric of space and time.
All right. All right.
Yeah.
All right, Bob, let's move from that galaxy far, far away to Gibson's Steakhouse in Gibson's Italia. Sounds like a lot of politicians are eating there and at other restaurants.
Yep. So because this is Illinois, there are very few restrictions on how you spend your campaign money if you're a political figure or a campaign committee. So I just analyzed spending through the lens of restaurants and meals and stuff like that. Just curious, really, about, you know, who's spending what, how much, and where, and in terms of their campaign funds. And discovered that, surprise, surprise, some of the swankiest, priciest restaurants were at the top of the list in terms of where politicians eat or throw their fundraisers or hold meetings, quote unquote, and stuff like that. So Gibson's, yes, Gibson's way at the top. You know, Chicago Cut, Paterino's, you know, Erie Cafe. Former assessor, Cook County Assessor Joe Berrios ate there I think the number was $450,000 spent at Erie Cafe over the years.
Goodness.
And Joe Berrios was like a third of that, you know, his campaign fund. Just goes on and on and on in terms of expenditures.
Well,
so
what kind of concerns does this raise?
Well, I mean, I'm just pointing out, you know, the numbers and factually that they have very good taste in restaurants, apparently. But, you know, so it's really a restaurant review. No, I'm just kidding. But it's, you know, it points out a couple of things. First of all, just the largesse and the amount that these political figures have at their disposal to spend. And they raise that largesse based on their governmental jobs, you know, at least significantly. And also there just are very few enforcement rules for are they using this for going out for a night with the spouse for the anniversary dinner, you know, on the tab of their campaign fund, or is this really political and governmental and or governmental business? And there's really very little way to detect that. In the past, some politicians have, you know, been lit up and, you know, the FBI's looked at them and, you know, prosecuted them for living high in the hog off their campaign funds because, first of all, A, it's not allowed, but B, if you're doing it and you're not paying income taxes, well, then that's a problem, right? So the mechanisms, though, for looking at that are just very difficult. So so I use this as sort of a prism to kind of point that out as well.
Right. Thanks. Claire, what other stories are you kind of keeping an eye on?
Well, I'll mention this only because Bob is wearing the Chicago Bears merch today, but Chicago Bears fans will have more than turkey dinner to look forward to this Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. The Bears will be in Detroit to play the Lions. For the holiday matchup. Many of us look forward to this. Always kind of a fun game, a little fun rivalry. It's actually the second time in the last three seasons the Bears have played on Thanksgiving Day. The team's full schedule will be released today, this afternoon, this evening. I believe it's 6:30 Central Time. This was just sort of a teaser that came out to get people excited about football when we're in the middle of baseball season. WNBA just started, but let's get excited about Chicago Bears
Lions
football.
Lions and Tigers and Bears.
That's
my. Miriam, I saw that inflation, we learned, was at its highest level in 3 years. It's up 3.8% in April compared with a year ago. And this is right in time for summer air conditioning. We learned about some big increases for electricity bills for ComEd customers. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so it's looking like ComEd electric customers are going to see at least a 12% jump in monthly charges starting next month. And it comes after last year, another double-digit increase in price.
Oy.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about something happier. What other science, cool science news are you keeping your eye on? Anything else?
Well, I kind of am marveling at the fact that the Perseverance rover and the Curiosity rover are still, like, kicking around on Mars. I was a space reporter for about 10 years, and I covered them a whole bunch. And these little robots have a lot of personality, and they still are just, you know, doing their thing.
A couple of little Wall-Es.
They are, yeah, just out there in space, separated, but on the same planet.
Excellent. All right, well, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been talking with Miriam Kramer and Claire Lane from WBEZ and Bob Hergeth from the Sun-Times. Thank you.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Micah Yason, and edited by Ethan Schwab. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in-the-loop. Thanks for listening.